Special education? Yes, I am sorry. And please introduce yourselves.
Good afternoon. My name is Linda Albee. I'm from the University of Oregon Early Intervention Program.
I'm Beth Harn, a faculty member in the elementary and middle secondary program.
And I'm Emma Martin, and I'm one of the practicum coordinators, and I currently coordinate the early childhood elementary program.
Lisa Hellum, clinical director, middle secondary special education.
So with the review for how the different programs are meeting the new OARs, we thought that Linda Albee would go first in terms of how she documented how the early intervention program, who's not making any changes to their current program, has documented their efforts.
As Beth mentioned, we have no changes. We are a four-term program with licensure, and it's early intervention, early childhood special ed. So we continue to just address the OARs, map onto them, as we have since 1979, I believe. So we don't have any changes at this point. It's just that we work very closely with the special ed program, and they have some changes in their program, some new coursework that our students will be taking in the future.
Are there any questions of the early intervention program?
Do you support candidates for licensure in early intervention?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Well, my question would lead then to if you have no changes in your program, but you're introducing candidates for licensure, how have you addressed the new special ed standards?
Just through coursework. Okay. Our changes in our coursework, our syllabi, addressing the new ones that come up that we modify and just change our syllabi and work closely as a group. We meet regularly to map onto the changes that go on in the other program.
Thank you.
Can you give an example of how you did that? An example of what you changed and embedded it in a course that you already offered? Because I didn't, when I read the material, that wasn't evident to me.
Can you give me one OAR that you are?
No, I'm not thinking about a particular OAR, but what you seem to have said is that you didn't change your program, but you embedded the new standards into courses that you already have. And my question was, can you give me an example of how you did that?
Just thinking of things like some of the OARs, the competencies that address like diversity or early literacy, we add those. We have a families class at this time where we're, you know, including diversity. We include early reading into early literacy into our coursework, our methods coursework, our applications coursework. All those are required courses of our students at this time. We have four core courses that we teach in our program, and then other coursework that is addressed we take with the students from early and elementary education. Does that kind of give you an idea?
It does.
Yeah.
Perhaps this would be addressed as we move along the table, but could you briefly explain how you arrange the full spectrum, or how you cover the full spectrum of disabilities in your program? You know, all of them in one program?
Is this something that one of the others will address?
Yeah.
Okay. Perhaps I might have jumped in too soon. Let's go ahead and let you present what you have, and then if questions remain. I started it, so thank you.
Okay, so what I thought I'd do is we put together a large packet of materials, and I thought I'd just highlight some of the key elements, and then we can open it up to questions for folks. So one of the things that we were very fortunate is we got a federal grant from the Office of Special Education Programs to actually look at program enhancements, as well as our partners at Portland State got the same grant. So we actually started back in 07 as a faculty in examining the quality of our program and to identify areas that we felt that we needed to improve. And one of the ways that we went about doing that is we created a couple of stakeholder groups. We had a focus group that had district level representation, both in urban as well as in local regional areas in Eugene. We also had special education teachers on that process as well to get input as to what they feel the critical skills that special ed teachers in Oregon need to have. We also did a student survey with our past graduates for the last 5 years, and within that survey, they gave us feedback as to what they felt very capable in doing from day one, once they got out of the program, as well as areas that they felt that they wanted additional training and support in, as well as we did as a faculty, we took careful time in looking carefully at what we are teaching in our current program, specifically which readings that we're doing, the nature of the assignments that we were doing. And from that process in year one, we identified some critical areas that we are doing an excellent job at, as well as areas that we needed improvement at. In particular, looking at how we're supporting our students in working with English language learners, infusing diversity aspects in great detail across all of our courses, as well as supporting our soon-to-be graduates on how to implement IEPs in more advanced types of settings. Then that led into year two, where we really then took time of crosswalking our current program with the old OAR standards, because we didn't know the new OARs were coming. And within that, what we did is we identified some gaps as well as some redundancies in terms of our course content coverage. We also invited out Sylvia Lennon Thompson, who at the time was at University of Texas at Austin and a specialist in working with students that are English language learners. She came out and worked with all of our faculty, looked at all of our syllabi, and gave us specific suggestions on improving our syllabi as well as our assignments, and it was a really great experience. So we really feel that we've enhanced the nature of our instructional experience in working with students that are English language learners. Then the following year, which is 09, that's when the new OARs came out. So again, we took the time to really look at how our program is meeting the new OARs. We were really excited and appreciated the greater emphasis on focusing on language development in particular. That was really a nice eye-opener for us to kind of think about how we're addressing language in general across the lifespan and the age span. So we, our method sequence really took that to heart, and we looked at revising our current literacy strand in terms of our reading and writing courses and coming up with a 3-course sequence where we start from preschool in the first course to elementary school to middle and high school in terms of literacy development that has a focus on not only language development but also integrating reading and writing, focusing on integration of technology, because that was another area our graduates wanted to get greater emphasis on how to utilize technology in working with students with disabilities, as well as having an overt functional strand that cut across each of those areas as well. So we're, and those courses, the syllabi are under review at this point in time by the College of Education Curriculum Committee, and those syllabi are in your materials as well. We also identified, like I said, the area of technology as a need, so we purchased a smart board because unfortunately our building did not have one. So we purchased a smart board, and now we have that, and we're starting to use that in terms of teaching our courses and showing our students how to utilize this technology in real life settings, as well as we purchased flip cameras, and each of our students out in practicum right now have a flip camera. And one of the things that we're doing with that, which is related also in the new OARs, is the whole personal and professional practices and reflection. So we're really trying to build that self-reflective personal practice from the beginning before they actually get into the field. And so we're doing that this year, and Emma and Lisa might want to talk a little bit more about that. But it's been kind of a neat new experience, and we're looking at potentially using that for practicum evaluation in the future. So then this year, what we have done is as a group, we have looked at the nature of what our graduates have been leaving the program with, and we decided that our graduates would benefit better from a 2-year sequence rather than our 5-term sequence that has been going on. Many of our students, and Emma, correct me if I'm wrong, about 40% of our students over the last couple of years who have entered as 5-term, 1-year sequences, changed their mind halfway through and moved into a 2-year sequence because their 2-year sequence colleagues are learning more. And they feel that they're better prepared and they're getting more out of the coursework. So we, as a program, really took that to heart and recognized that we might be doing them a disservice in the future in terms of the students that they're going to be working with. So we are proposing, and what you have before you, is a 2-year sequence for all of our graduates that will afford them not only that they would graduate with a master's, but that they would, upon completion, if they chose to, be have an endorsement at both the elementary level as well as the middle secondary level. And the practicum coordination aspect has been looked at, and we have determined methods of how we can ensure that our students have those practicum experiences across the different endorsement levels as well. We also, in terms of technology, have we are currently developing an induction website because our to support our graduates once they complete how to be successful within those first 1 to 2 years. And the areas that we're focusing on are providing just-in-time types of topics that we know that our graduates will need at the beginning of the school year, what happens in the middle of the school year, et cetera. And that is happening currently in terms of the building process, and we're hoping to have it done by spring term so that our graduates can start to see this as a resource before they actually leave our campus. So those are the big ideas in terms of what is within the materials. But we're very happy to answer any questions that you guys have, as well as address any comments.
Thank you very much, Linda. Mr. Beck.
Just so you know, I'm paying attention to program approval. I'd like to know what a flip camera is.
A flip camera.
He asked me, and I said, you're on your own, big boy.
A flip camera is a... it's a video camera that's remarkably simple to use, and it's literally like about this big, and it's very you can recharge it, and it captures about 2 hours of video with audio, and so students have been given these to be able to practice in terms of teaching their lessons both at home but also within the school setting. And Emma's actually been having the students bring in their recordings to review the experiences, and we've been having some good. So the beauty of them is that they're very simple to use, and they're not very expensive, as compared to the older. Here's an example, as compared to the more higher quality video cameras that are out there. So
also, you can email the files quite easily. So the technology is very user friendly. Yeah.
Okay. Dr. Green.
Could you maybe I haven't seen it. There are two tracks, the two-year one for, but and the other one is continuing to be the add-on course. But could you clarify for me the practicum experience that is happening for the people that are doing the add-on endorsement, and how you execute that with in-service teachers?
In terms of add-on endorsements, so someone who has a license and wants to get that endorsement in special education. Right now,
that's your special educator one. I thought two options will be available.
Okay.
So I'm unclear. You said the in-service teacher, so people coming back to get an endorsement, or are you talking about initial training?
Well, it says here that there will be two options available, special education. Not including the transition. So if they're in service, I just want to know how the practicum.
Okay, so sometimes what happens is we will have teachers with a general education license who come back and want to get an add-on endorsement in special education. For those individuals, it's approximately, it's close to, I think it's 48 credits. And they complete coursework in the methods areas, as well as the other required courses that we have currently with approved by TSPC. And then they complete three sequence practicum. They do practicum one, which is 3 credits, practicum two, which is 4, and then a practicum 3 rather than a full day student teaching. So it's a 5-credit practicum as their final one. And so, again, the criteria that we set up for them is the same as for all of our students in terms of exiting. They need to demonstrate those competencies in special education.
Okay, is that practicum 3? You have very nice tables in here that show the descriptions of things. I just like wondering where the practicum 3 description is.
It meets the same guidelines as the final supervised field experience. It's just a less, and fortunately, it's
they have less time to meet all those criteria, but their experience level seems to make that much more streamlined, because they know how to access those things.
So you're able to do that with in-service teachers 40 hours a week, 8 hours a day?
No. Most of them are, for the first two terms, often they are working half-time, and then there are many of our coursework is often in the evening and late afternoon. So for example, I'll give you an example of a student who is doing that currently, who is coming back, has regular education credential, and is taking a sequence of coursework. Actually, this person took some of the coursework through the year before, and they've stretched theirs out so that it works within their work schedule.
So they have been taking their coursework all the way along. And then this year, we have been coordinating with their district and their principal. We have kind of a service contract agreement where we work with their administration about release time for them to get assigned to different sites. And so we can make sure that they're getting the adequate practice at the different authorization levels. And then sometimes it works to be able to have them carve out a part of their day and do an on-site practicum within that. That's a little tricky. We have to be very careful about their roles. And so we put a contractual agreement into place with their district. And then for their student teaching, often we work with the principal and the district to find a placement that is near enough by that they can coordinate some of that time and still do some flex work back at their site. Sometimes that doesn't work. We want them to get the appropriate experience, and so we ask for a release time for that spring term. What used to be the spring term and will now be the winter term.
Okay, and so that's the finalized supervised field experience.
Yes.
The equivalent of practicum.
It is, and they complete the same requirements across that year in their practical work, in their clinical work, as all the other students do, but in that last term, they're only assigned for 5 hours rather than the 8 hours.
I just think you would be, just for your own counsel for further, when you have a site visit, you know, if that's not explained here,
okay.
All right, I think there's going to be questions about how the in-service teachers are covered, because the practicum, you do a great job of explaining the program where people are getting a special education license. I just think the add-on endorsement is a little fuzzy in terms of how that particular aspect of it is executed. And so it's been my experience working with other colleges that if you get tripped up on this, I think it would just be wise to have that well defined.
That's excellent feedback. And I think, you know, we have also been working on some dual certification routes and how students can more easily add these endorsements and what kinds of things might help a student. Or we really would like more teachers to be dual endorsed. We feel that that's a great need out in the schools. And so how do we make that more attractive and more easy for them to have access to? So that's one aspect of the program that we're really wanting to work more on, but I agree that we could add some explicit definition around that in our paperwork.
I think every institution joins you in wanting to be able to help generate more special educators to serve the needs of our students in the state. The challenge is, I think, we're caught in between a rock and a hard place about how you do that with in-service teachers. And so, once again, my caution about making that explicit up front so that the commission is confused later on when the cycles occurs about how you execute it. Because I don't really see how an in-service teacher could actually meet the terms of the final supervised field experience. Because you talk about 40 hours a week, and how that would happen. Yeah.
Okay. If I can go on and explain that, or...
Well, I'd love to know, because that's kind of what I was talking to Jan about, is if you get it right, let us know how you did it, because the bringing of the add-on endorsement to the in-service teacher.
Well, and
Okay, so lots of times, we really think of it as, it's an add-on endorsement, but the field, there's so much in the field of special education to understand in terms of the wide range of populations that our license is qualifying you for, and the number of interventions and the number of areas that you have to be versed in. So it really, I would say that none of our candidates complete all their, I mean, it's a progressive and developmental process, which is why we included a developmental chart about how these skills, we feel, clinically build on one another. So there's a multiple page document that talks about some of our assessment tools and how those build over the terms. So I would say that student, whether they're doing 5 hours in that final term or whether they're doing 8 hours, the amount of decision-making around the data they're collecting, the amount of diagnostics and assessments around what types of interventions to put in place, I think it really builds from prior terms as well as being there. So I would say, whether you're 5 hours on the site or 8 hours, you're able to demonstrate those things at a higher level and in a more independent level. And I think that's how you would see that. And with their background as a regular teacher, some of those systems that may be newer to others, are already easily negotiated and by experienced teachers. So for them, it's laying over that extra layers of assessment and that ongoing decision-making model rather than a longer period of time between assessments.
So, like, an in-service teacher, if they have a prep or something, you're saying that maybe they can go down to, like, a special ed room, and that's maybe when they execute at least an hour or something?
Oh, I see what you're saying. Like, I see what you're saying. I'm getting it. You're saying, actually, the logistical, the schedule, the time. Okay. Well, thank you. So in that case, I have two different students I can think of that are doing it quite different ways. One is we tried to work it to where their final supervised experience would be in their site, because that's where they want to continue to work, but they want to change the role, and the district and administrator want to change their role. So they are actually carving out 5 hours of their teaching day, which is the majority of it, and they are, that is the period of time that they're being supervised. Their clinical supervisor comes by and looks at different facets of that. Their documentation for that is open for analysis, and they bring that to the table. So in that case, it aligns with what they're doing in their job. In another case, the district is very interested in moving that person that happens to be a middle school teacher into a high school position. We got the release time. They're being released from their job, and they are moving 10 blocks away to the high school and working with a mentor teacher right there. In the first case, we have the SPED teacher collaborating with the person on site, and their job duties have switched. They're now scheduled into special education environments and integrated environments.
Right. I just think that practice should be described as sort of a negotiated process that is a little more transparent.
Thank you. That's Keith?
As I was looking through the materials you provided, you indicated that the syllabi that you submitted were the new and revised ones. So one syllabi that did not change in this process were not part of the material, or what you submitted for the SPED included all of the syllabi for all the courses?
What's on the disc? What you did receive were the ones that we are looking at revising or changing to reflect our new program.
Okay.
So that would be that literacy sequence, the three terms of reading and early literacy. There's a math one in there. We're looking at going from 3 credits to 4 credits, and again, covering all of the content from kindergarten through high school.
Okay. And so there, if a course within the program didn't change as a result, that was not included in the materials.
That's correct.
I just wanted to make sure.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you had made a statement that it revised the syllabi and it's still under review with the faculty curriculum committee on campus?
Yes.
So they haven't approved it yet, but it's been through the consortium?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Program approval, folks. Do you have further questions? Okay. Commissioners? Vicki?
How are you dealing with the HQ issue?
For elementary is, you know, much easier because we take, the students take the multiple subject tests. I'm going to let Lisa address that.
Thank you.
That's a harder one.
Thanks, Emma. So students, especially students that are targeting working in the high school and working on academics especially, are really one thing that they are tending towards, gravitating towards, is because we don't quite have the dual licensing that we would like to have, and we're, like I said, we're working towards that because we think that's kind of the teacher of the future. And what we really are thinking is, right now, lots of them gravitate towards one of their master's requirements, which is a specialization in coursework. So many of them use their specialization in coursework to go and seek out more of the content to enhance things they already have in their backgrounds. So, for example, I have currently a student that's has a background in history, and he is enhancing that, and he's right now considering whether he wants to take those additional specialization credits in language arts because he thinks that would really fit better with what he's doing in special education and really meld the two together, or whether he really wants to do that in history so that he could offer integrated classes, because they're really thinking that direction. Many of our students are thinking about how could we make integration work for everybody better. So I would say that's currently how it's being tackled. And I would say that there are students that are ahead of the game in terms of their preparation prior to coming to us. And then there are students that are not. And those are the students that we're really struggling with how to find a way other than going through an entire another program. So that's, yeah.
And we've worked with our college bed, the teacher education program, as well as they review syllabi of their prior coursework and see how it maps on to that, as well as we have linkages at the university level with the math department, social studies department, as to what they feel are the necessary courses that would line up with that as well. So we have developed different tracks of coursework, as well as we have a procedure for students who come in with different types of experiences to review their prior coursework to see how that maps on as well.
You don't have to answer this, but...
thank you for the pre-correction.
It absolutely depends on who they're working with, I think, and what the needs of those students are. And I think in terms of all of our students, I think have a really huge sensitivity to the standards and what the sequence of instruction needs to be and how we're mapping onto that. And
what?
And where they end up working.
Yeah.
And the issue is how far away are their IEP goals from that, and how do we fold those two together? And I think in a sense, I mean, I could say yes, but I can think of situations where it doesn't come into play. And I would much rather, in many of the situations, I would actually argue that our regular education teachers really need the ability to differentiate and to introduce interventions for the kids that are the outliers. And I don't care if they're outliers in this way or that way, but the fact that they're not learning the way things are being presented. And so I think I could argue that from both sides equally, that we've come to the point where we're asking special educators to be content specialists, but we're not going back to the content specialists and saying, where is your ability to differentiate and show me the tracking systems that show that you are being successful with your students, no matter whether it's language issues or developmental disabilities.
Great answer. And don't forget, we is the federal government.
Right.
Okay. Well, right, because it's an NCLB.
Yeah.
So the transition to highly effective will be quite interesting.
Right.
That would be lovely.
I know.
It depends on how it gets written into law.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Bill?
Gordon, the question, I guess, for the panel or your committee, probably half or more of the people who go through alternative assessment, the reason they're going through is because they failed to pass the reading test. And I'm wondering, is the question, I guess, would be, are universities looking at their curriculum and how it's being assessed through that formal assessment process, and why so many students are just not making it? And it doesn't point, you know, it isn't a specific university with more than others. It's mm-hmm. pretty much across the board.
The school I went to.
I can respond to that a little bit in part, Bill, and we haven't touched on this for a long time, but so my information stated that when we were meeting with a reading specialist even 3 and 4 years ago, it was their belief that the content in that practice test is significantly outdated based on what is being taught today in terms of good teaching methods. And so we've known for quite a while that's not a great test. That's why we've asked the other testing company to look at ramping that up and making it more modern. The test itself hasn't been revisited and revised for over a decade. So it's really, it would be seductive to lay it at the feet of the program, but I think there's some credit to do the test.
As a clinical director, I also see some unusual things out in the schools from time to time, as well in terms of people doing gymnastics to meet some of the guidelines in the AYP. And sometimes that means testing students at a level where not everyone's in agreement that that's the appropriate level to test a student. And I think that can also account for differences in schools.
Shirley?
For the add-on endorsement, do the students have the opportunity to have just as much time in case management, like facilitating the IEP meeting, et cetera, as they would in the other program?
Yeah, they're the same requirements, and supervision is the same. Yes.
Thank you.
Often they have a little bit more because of their being embedded in an environment.
System already.
They already have the connections to say, oh, can I see how you run it? Can I see how you run it?
One of the things that we noted, and Keith has alluded to, is that you have a number of syllabi that are still under revision, and it's not standard for us to approve a program when we don't know for sure what your syllabi are going to be.
The syllabi that are being revised, as opposed to the new syllabi, you have
the new syllabi.
Right.
The syllabi that are being revised is a matter of content that we didn't feel that it's significantly different. It's more so in terms of changing within the sequence of when the courses are offered, because we've changed the timing of when courses are offered relatively significantly. So we're revising the content in relationship to knowing what they have been taught the courses prior to that course. So I'm teaching a course that was traditionally taken the first year, but it's now being taken the second year. And so my revision is simply a matter of knowing what they had received in the first year and changing my content to be responsive to that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, when do you anticipate that you'll be finished with what I would term a matrix that would delineate those content course alignment?
When would you like them? I mean, that's, I don't feel, again, like the nature of the changes are relatively minor, so we could get that. No, he's talking about.
Well, two, you've got revised syllabi and you have new syllabi and you submitted revised and new to us. But I go back to a comment that you made that it's still under the approval process within your own institution.
Mm-hmm.
And when will that be completed?
Do that you will be, it? It's actually next week, as I believe the meeting is. We'll get a decision at that point.
It's a question about our process. Can we approve it and expect those syllabi with their yearly, the end of the year report? I mean, I'm...
Well, for staff review.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I would, an end of the year report is all the way until July. So it seems to me like if we approved it based on the condition of staff final review and reviews.
That'd be fine. I just want to make sure that we have them.
Yeah,
yes.
I don't disagree. And I wouldn't mind if we had a good, clear description about how the in-service teacher arrives at.
Yeah, we noted that so we can prove that too.
So with those two caveats, I'd be ready to suggest we could.
Would you have to make a motion?
Well, based on those two caveats, the completed syllabi and a little bit better description about how the in-service teacher completes the practicum program, having those things turned in, I would say that once staff has reviewed them, then we could, say that it was approved. So we'll vote today to approve it based on them completing those two conditions. Does that seem to make sense?
The staff will, yes. So
speaking. The staff. Oh, Keith and his staff. Haven't you ever heard about his staff? He's got a lot of staff.
Okay, so Tom has made a motion. Do I have a second?
I second.
Okay, Tom has made the motion, and Nancy has seconded again. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you.
Thank you for the feedback.
Thank you.